we go. All right, Tuesday night Bible study, The Art of Dying. Yes, there is an art, right? And so let's see, we're on week six tonight, I do believe. So we're going to go through the next chapter in this book, The Art of Dying. Here, Julie, I'll give you one. You can keep it if you want. Follow along, write in it, do whatever you want. It's from an actual book.
I know.
All right, so you remember the first temptation that confronts somebody who's approaching death, and that was on page 41, 42, is the temptation against faith. That's the devil tempting you to doubt. Are you really saved? Do you really have faith? Is heaven real? That temptation of doubt, which is a key for the devil's temptation. And then we talked about how to combat that doubt. Then the next temptation that's mentioned in the book is the temptation concerning despair. That, you didn't do enough good things. Or, your sins are too great. You can't be forgiven. That temptation to despair. That's what we talked about last week, remember? Any questions that maybe have come up or bubbled up in your mind as you were thinking about the last couple weeks? All right, then let's launch into the third temptation that the devil confronts us with. And so I'm on page 57. There's a picture there. It says, Temptation of the Devil Concerning Impatience. Why the artist put an upside-down table there, I'm not really sure. I guess somebody who's impatient is going to start turning over furniture. I don't know. But turn the page. So there we are on page 59. These are short chapters, like you know, so I'm going to read a decent chunk of it. So the author here says, Third, the devil tempts the sick person through the impatience that arises out of profound illness, saying, Why do you endure such heavy suffering, which is intolerable for every creature and thoroughly useless to you? Not even for the sake of exacting punishment for your faults should such great suffering rightly occur. For it is written, In punishments the more benign interpretation should prevail. What is even more aggravating, no one has compassion for you, which no one doubts is against all reckoning. And although your friends may express compassion in words, nevertheless in their minds they desire greatly your death on account of the goods you will relinquish. Indeed, after your soul casts off your body, they intend to pay their respects for scarcely the span of a day for the sake of all the possessions you have left behind. So the author here is putting words in the mouth of the devil, of course. And some of these temptations really do confront people as they approach death. Or even now, so they might confront us as well. I'm going to point out like the two main points he makes here. Point number one, right at the beginning, he says, Why do you endure such heavy suffering, which is intolerable for every creature and thoroughly useless to you? People will ponder in their heads, Why am I suffering this way? Why do I have cancer? That's one of the more common problems, of course. Why is this cancer taking me so fast? Or why did somebody else get healed of their cancer, but I'm not healed of my cancer? Okay? So there's all forms of impatience that can come from questioning suffering. So that's the first part of the devil's temptation here. And the second part, yeah, you guys kind of all laughed, and it is a little tongue-in-cheek, but actually, I didn't plan it this way, but it kind of works with Julie tonight because it says, you know, oh, all your friends, they don't care about your death. They just want your stuff. That's what the devil is saying, right? Sometimes that's true, right? Are there people out there, family members, extended family, that they're really just more interested in great grandma's, jewelry. That's what they want. They don't care about, they never came to visit her. They just want the, you know, whatever. Julie, in a little bit here, once I finish this part, she's going to talk about gift giving and charitable giving at the end of life. So that's kind of part of what she's going to talk about. So those two sound familiar, right? Common temptations that the devil will confront us with, including and especially as we approach death. That next sentence there says, With these and similar tactics, the devil strains to lead the person toward impatience. I would say another form of impatience, which I have seen as a pastor, is somebody just saying, Pastor, I'm ready. What's taking God so long? I want to go to heaven now. Why is God waiting so long? Why is he letting me suffer this long? Look at the situation I'm in or the state that I'm in. I want to go to heaven now. And I tell people, you've probably heard other pastors say this too, I say there's nothing wrong with praying that God take you home now. But we have to be patient for God's timing. And then I usually try to get them to crack a smile to say, God's not done painting your room in heaven yet. The heavenly mansions. Your room is still getting painted and fixed up for you, so he's not ready for you yet. Then usually they smile and, oh, okay, yeah, yeah. All right, so that next page there, page 60. For most, and especially those dying unprepared and unjustly, their illness renders them impatient and grumbling. This can occur to such an extent that suffering excessively and impatiently, they may seem out of their mind and lacking good sense, as happens in many cases. And then look at the footnote there. It must be noted that delirium, a syndrome involving disturbed consciousness and other cognitive changes, is common in dying persons and not generally subject to moral analysis. A person could be truly virtuous but unable to exercise patience in the moment because of changes in mental status from severe illness. So I do want to make a little comment about that and give you some assurances. I've visited many people that have dementia, or many people who start hallucinating as they approach death. I saw someone just a few weeks ago. That is not them. That is the disease talking. That is the sinfulness within them that is degrading their mind. So I haven't had this question asked of me very much, especially from faithful members like yourselves. But somebody might say, I think maybe once or twice I've had somebody say this, well, Grandma is just such in a state of dementia, I don't even know if she has faith anymore in Jesus. She doesn't recognize anybody. Pastor, does she still have faith? Is she going to be saved? And my answer is, yes. That faith is still down deep in there. And even though she doesn't recognize you, she doesn't recognize me, she barely knows where she is, she or he, of course, whatever, the dementia is so severe, yet that faith is buried down deep inside of her psyche, so deep that it's there. And what you hear and see is not her. That's the disease. Does that make sense? Now, many of you have dealt with or had parents or grandparents or friends in dementia. It's really sad. I agree. And I visited a number of shut-ins here from our church that have been in a state of dementia. And, you know, one of the things you can do, you guys know this, you've heard every pastor say this. I was visiting someone a couple years ago who was in dementia. She asked me the same question about church 3 times in a row. So what am I going to do, you know? So what I did is I started praying the Lord's Prayer. She started praying the Lord's Prayer. What a blessing for memory work in Lutheran schools, right? She knew it. So even though she didn't know who I was, she didn't remember her own kids, she kept asking me the same question over and over again, but she knew the Lord's Prayer. That was awesome. You've heard other pastors make those comments. I've experienced that. Pastor Kordokas has experienced that. Faith is still there. So don't let the devil tempt you otherwise. All right? Yeah.
I worked at continuing care for a few years in the activity department. Mm-hmm. And we were to visit everybody on our side every day. And some of them were bedbound and some were not vocal at all. But when they took a player in with hymns, they would start singing.
Yeah. You know, a real well-known one that a lot of people in that state know, just Jesus Loves Me. Oh, that's a classic Sunday school song. Everybody knows that, and they do. We still sing it in church on occasion. Yeah, they start singing Jesus Loves Me. Well, it's full of gospel. Jesus loves me. This I know. Yes. So these are common temptations. So now what does the author say? Good inspiration of the angel. Now, yeah, we would say the Holy Spirit. But the angel can be involved too. An angel can be involved too. Concerning patience. We should have patience. Okay, so turn the page. What does he say here? Against the third temptation of the devil, the angel gives good inspiration saying, "Oh man, turn your mind away from impatience, through which the devil seeks nothing other than the defeat of your soul with his own deadly prodding. For through impatience and murmuring, the soul is lost, whereas through patience, it is preserved. As Gregory attests, no one who murmurs inherits the kingdom of heaven. Thus, do not let your sickness, which is slight, compared with what you merit, weary you. I'm going to pause right there. What does St. Paul say? You know, I should have looked up chapter and verse. I forgot. What does St. Paul say about the suffering that we encounter? It's common to man. What you're encountering is common to all mankind, and God will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. Right. So if this, one of the, for tomorrow's Bible study, I apologize, I'm going to look up the chapter and verse so you can write that down there. But that's one thing. If the devil is tempting you to say, this is more than you deserve, actually, it's less than I deserve. What punishment, suffering, do we actually deserve? Eternal punishment in hell. So what I'm suffering now is less than what I deserve. That's what one of the counter arguments against this temptation of the devil, okay? It's slight compared with what you merit. Since it is a sort of purgatory before death, yeah, okay, I might actually agree with that. Julie, so you know, the class already knows, this was written by a Catholic monk in the Middle Ages at the time of Martin Luther. Have you heard of it, this book?
I heard of this book.
Yeah. It's become kind of a trendy topic right now. Lots of pastors are, I am too. So, but, we don't agree with the Catholic doctrine of purgatory. That's not a scriptural doctrine. However, used in this way, your suffering before you die is kind of a purgatory? Well, yeah, okay, it is. You're suffering for some period of months or years while God gets heaven ready for you, or until conditions are right and he takes you home to heaven. So, in that way, we could probably use this word purgatory in a proper sense. Sort of purgatory before death when tolerated as it should be, patiently and willingly with gratitude. For gratitude is necessary not only for things that give consolation, but also for things that come as affliction. As Gregory says, mercifully, God applies temporal chastisement so as not to inflict eternal punishment. I don't know how many of you remember, it was a number of years ago, before COVID, I think, I preached a sermon and then I published it in Christ Times that was, be thankful for problems in life. Everybody remember that? I barely remember it, so I don't fault you for not remembering my sermons. We should be thankful for problems in life? Oh, come on, Pastor. No, we pray that God would take away our problems. Yes, we can and we should pray that. But the fact that God allows some troubles in life shows that he loves you, because that's a form of discipline. He's using those troubles in your life, those problems in your life, many of them he does take away, but he allows a few of them in every one of our lives, he allows a few of them to strengthen you in faith. Because what do troubles or problems in life do? They drive you back to prayer. They drive you back to putting your eyes on Jesus. Look at the troubles he went through. So that is one of the things, it's the classic thing. I think I must have heard it when I was young too. Parents spanking me. Yes, I grew up. They had a paddle. Paddle is on the top of the refrigerator. And I think I got paddled once or twice, maybe as 7 or 8 year old, and I learned my lesson. I'm like, okay, don't do that ever again. And so my parents, we were in that kind of, it's old fashioned nowadays to actually paddle a kid, right? No, you can't do that anymore. And the joke, of course, was, this is hurting me more than it's hurting you, right? You know that joke. Well, some of that is, there's a little truth to that, a little spark of truth in there. God doesn't want to have to allow you to go through some troubles in life. He doesn't want to. He does it in order to strengthen you in faith. And he does it in order to drive you back to prayer when you're weak in prayer. He does it to point you to Jesus when you're not looking at Jesus. Okay? Some of you guys know my tongue in prayer, my tongue-in-cheek prayer that I say sometimes, that I do say it kind of lightheartedly. God, I'm strong in faith right now. Please don't send me any troubles. Please. I'm okay. I'll keep praying to you, I promise. I'll be fervent in my prayer. Don't send me any troubles. I say that a little jokingly, but I actually do pray that. All right. Augustine says, Lord, burn and cut here and there that you may spare me in eternity. Hence, let no tribulations disturb you, since they show that Christ does not wish to abandon you. Accordingly, Augustine says, the evils that punish us here compel us to go to God. That's exactly the point. The troubles you have push you to God, point you to God. Okay, flip the page. So page 64, the very last sentence of that first partial paragraph. Direct your gaze toward Christ, the most patient one, and all the saints, even to death. Boy, that sounds Lutheran. Written by a Catholic monk. Yes, direct your gaze toward Christ. That's where we should look. Note that when the sick person perceives that he is tempted by impatience, he should consider first how harmful impatience is. Well, you can do that. I don't know that if that's going to help or not, but you can think to yourself, well, being impatient is going to weaken me in faith, so I've got to learn to be patient. I've got to learn to be patient. Second, he should consider that patience must be vigilantly preserved. First, because it's essential, and then if you go to the top of the next page, second, because it is useful. Is patience essential and useful? Yes, it is. It's a godly characteristic. Was God patient with mankind? How long did he wait before he took them into exile in Babylon? He was waiting and waiting and waiting. 700 years waiting. How long is he waiting until the end of the world, Judgment Day? We don't know, but it's on the order of thousands of years. He's waiting and waiting and waiting. Yes, patience is essential and it is useful. So, in addition to what this author says here, a couple other things I would mention to you about being patient when you're confronted with the temptation to impatience. One is, remember that God uses those events and troubles and struggles in life to strengthen you. Okay? Remember that. That helps you get through. Okay? God is giving me this trouble in life. He's going to use it for some greater purpose to strengthen me. That helps give you purpose in the midst of struggles and problems. Okay? Second thing I would remind you, and I tell this to people all the time, especially if I'm visiting a shut-in who's, you know, infirm, can't get out, they truly are a shut-in, and Pastor, I don't know, there's nothing left for me to do. And you guys have heard me say this, and Pastor Q and others as well. God still has something for you to do. He's got tasks for you to do. Well, Pastor, I can't even get out of my bed, and I need help doing everything. What is there left for me to do? And I say, well, I can name at least two things right off the top of my head. Number one, pray for your family, your church, and your pastor. I can use your prayers. There's a task God has for you. Maybe that's one of the reasons he hasn't taken you home yet. Number two, witness to those who care for you. The nurses and the CNAs that come in to take care of you. Through your attitude and through your thankfulness to them, you're being a witness to Jesus. Evangelism, right there. I said, there's two purposes right there, and I could probably come up with more if you forced me to. So when you're impatient, remember those two things. That one is, God has a purpose for this. He's going to strengthen you through this. And secondly, he still has things for you to do in the midst of troubles and problems in life. He's got tasks for you to do. He's got goals for you to achieve. Okay? We don't always know what they are. But a lot of times what they are is just pray. Okay? All right. Wanted to get through that in under a half an hour, so we made it. Any questions or comments or discussion? Yeah, Andy.
Yeah, in Romans 5, starting with verse 3, it says, not only that, but we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not put us to shame because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us.
That's Romans 5, 3?
3 through 5.
Yeah. Write that down. Absolutely. Thank you, Andy. That is an excellent verse. I should have thought of that one myself. Yes, suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope. Absolutely true.
What was the reference again?
Romans 5, verses 3 through 5. Yeah, great verse. So keep that one in mind when you're confronted with temptations of impatience in the midst of suffering. Okay? Good. Any other questions or comments? All right. Well, then I'm going to turn it over. Is half hour enough, or 35 minutes, or whatever we got left?
Speed walk through.
You can go a little bit over if you want to. So this is Julie Burgess.
Hi there.
She's a gift planning coordinator.
Counselor.
Okay. Works for the LCMS Foundation and also is associated with CEF, Church Extension Fund. Oh, I'll get it going for you.
Right.
She's got a little visual presentation here. I'll get going.
Well, it's good to be with you all. So, yeah, I live in the Ann Arbor area, but I work with LCMS Foundation, which, has anyone heard of the LCMS Foundation? Okay.
I have.
Yeah. LCMS Foundation is based out of St. Louis. We're in the International Center down in St. Louis. In the Senate offices, but we're sometimes they call it the trust arm or the charitable arm of the Senate. And so we are here to help, and I am here to help Lutheran congregations throughout Michigan and members of Lutheran congregations get plans in place, right, and support our churches and our schools and ministries of all sorts and shapes and sizes, and making sure that the plans are in place to help support them and your family. So we got right onto the family there. So I've been in Lutheran ministry all my career. I was raised in a Lutheran home. This was my mom and dad's 65th wedding anniversary. You know, this was 3 years ago. So my mom is 88 now, and she is in the last stages of dementia. And so she's at that stage where we talked at dinner tonight. Her eyes are glassed over. We saw her at Easter, and I did start singing "I Know That My Redeemer Lives Without," and a little bit of it came out. So you're right. She knows, and she always knows Jesus loves me when you start singing those songs. But this is there's five kids in our family. All of us are married. My four brothers and sisters and their spouses all live in Southern Illinois. I married a Michigan boy and a teacher in Lutheran ministry. So we've been a few places around the country, but back here in Michigan for the last 9 years. That's my husband, and that's our crew right in here. Whoops. I just went backwards.
No, it's a touch screen.
Oh.
So don't touch the screen.
It'll
keep going forward.
Okay, no,
you got it. Okay.
So a lot of them live in Southern Illinois, and so I've been in Lutheran education for the last 4 years now. I've been working with the foundation, fully trained, got all my accreditation and everything for gift planning counseling, went to gift college, there actually is one. And yeah, I know it's impressive, isn't it? But it's been a real joy working with the Lutheran members throughout Michigan. And so that's why I'm here with you tonight, because Pastor Meisel asked me to come and share with you about getting your plans in place. And when we talk about getting our house in order, well, that's a little bit about what we're going to be talking about tonight. So it ties right in with death and dying, because you all know, heard this said many times, you got a plan, right? You got to have a plan. And what is the plan? Because, I say this earlier, a failure to plan is a plan that's going to fail, right? So if you don't make any plans, it's going to fail. All right, so LCMS Foundation, a little bit of information. We are the only LCMS organization offering comprehensive charitable expertise in the area of gift planning. And this doesn't mean gift planning just to ministry, but gift planning also to your family. So also we've got 68 years of experience in charitable gift planning, and there's 22 gift planners like me throughout the United States that work in districts, that work with seminaries, universities, all LCMS entities, okay? And so we're in partnership, the LCMS Foundation is in partnership with the Michigan District and the Church Extension Fund, so I have all these bosses to answer to, which is fun. They're all a good group of people to work with. And so everything that I bring to your congregation and to you is all free of charge. I'm not selling anything. I am only here to help counsel and guide you and make sure that you have a plan in place that you're at peace with and that's going to be a blessing to your family and also to the ministries that you care about. All right? So we offer areas in gift planning, investment services, and I talked to your church council or your church planning committee, education, collaboration. We do a lot of training seminars and things like that to help educate congregation leadership on the areas of gift planning and how you can grow your endowments through gift planning, and then also marketing. We have a great marketing team that provides great materials for churches to use for their plan, for their endowments. We like to use the verse from Ephesians 2, verse 10. Now, if you know Ephesians 2, verses 8 and 9, that talks about by grace. By grace we're saved. It is a gift from God. We didn't earn it. God gave it to us. We don't deserve it, but it's God's riches at Christ's expense, right? And then also going on to Ephesians 2, verse 10, because of that grace that we've received, We are his workmanship. We're created in Christ Jesus for good works. God's already gone before us, and we just get to follow in what God's done for us, right? So we get to follow in his footsteps and say, Lord, where are you leading me today? And I'm going to follow and do what you tell me to do. Yeah, so that's what we as Christians get to do every single day while we're walking, breathing, living on this earth. That's a blessing. So a little bit about estate planning. Some of you maybe have been through estate plans. You've organized your blessings. You've created a will or a trust. Maybe you've taken, you know, you've got things ready so your family doesn't have to. Let's just go over a little bit about the difference between a will versus a trust. Because a lot of times people are confused. They're like, what's the difference? Do I need a will? Do I need a trust? The answer is it depends. It really does. So just so you understand about a will is going to give direction, powers of attorney, right? That's while you're living. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. It's also going to name a personal representative. It used to be called an executor. Nowadays they call it a personal representative. That's the person that's just going to finalize your estate. Okay? Now here's the thing about a will. You don't want money to pass through a will, because if it passes through a will, guess what it also has to pass through?
Probate.
That's right. So if you plan properly, you're going to hear me say that four-letter word plan a lot. If you plan properly, that means all of your assets, your stocks, your investments, your home in Michigan, it's a ladybird deed, can pass through to your kids without going through probate. And as soon as you die, it goes directly to the kids. Okay, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But your all of your assets, life insurance, all that, you POD, payable on death, right? That passes to the kids. It does not go through the will. You don't want it to go through the will. Now, here's the little other part about that, though. A lot of people have a will, and in your will it says, 10% of my estate will go to the church, like Christ Lutheran Church in Stevensville, Michigan. And it says, 10%. I remember the church in my estate. But the other side of that is, well, wait a minute. If you planned it properly, all of your assets are going to go directly to your heirs. The house is going to go directly to the heirs. Where is the 10% going to come from? There isn't a 10%. I have asked many attorneys, and I work with a lot of attorneys, and I've asked them, does this actually happen? And they say no. So that's why sometimes churches are going, boy, we've had all these deaths in the last, you know, 5-10 years, and you know, we've only had a couple of people send, you know, a couple of estates. Well, it probably was because it was in a will, and everything beneficiary to the kids or to the heirs, they planned well, but that gift never happened to the church. So let's make a plan so that the church can receive a gift from your estate that's actually going to happen. So that's a will, okay? So planning well, a will can work for you. Now, a trust is a little differently. A trust works where all the assets go into the trust, right? So the house goes into the trust. All of your investments, your life insurance, all except IRAs. We don't put IRAs in trusts anymore because of the change of the IRS rules on that. But everything else goes into the trust, right? And then your trustee pays all the bills first. Got to get all the bills paid first. And then however you want money distributed to your heirs. If you want certain heirs to get percentages that are different, you can do all that. It's kind of like having control from the grave, right? You can say this kid gets it, and this, you can say so many years, you know, all kinds of different stipulations there. So a trust, you have a little more control over. You have a trustee that administers that, okay? But here's the thing about a trust. I've had people say to me, well, 10% of our estate from the trust is going to go to the church. And we have a $500,000 estate, so there's going to be a $50,000 gift to the church. Well, let's see what's funding the trust. Ah, okay. Well, now we look at the trust and we go, well, okay, you have the house is in the trust. All right, what else is funding the trust? So we start looking at all the assets. Nothing. Everything else is payable out to the kids. They just beneficiary everything to the kids or to the heirs. Well, the rest of that, let's say the other $250,000 is going to go directly to the kids. Well, what's the 10% gift? Whatever's left from the sale of the home and paying all the debt. So now that gift might be around maybe $20,000 or so to the church, but you thought it was going to be $50,000. So that's the misunderstandings about the way things are set up in your estate plan that we take a look at, and there are ways to make sure it's going to actually happen the way you want it to happen. And keep in mind, things are going to change, right? We'll talk about all that. But planning well, and then every 3 to 5 years, pull out those plans and review them. And look at them and say, is this still what I want? Because as long as you're living and breathing on this earth, you can make changes. Okay? So the gift planning part comes in where you're understanding what's the best asset to give to family, to ministry. What's the best method to give it? What's the best gift to my family? What's the best gift to ministry? There are better gifts to give to the church than others, because this church and all Lutheran churches around Michigan and throughout the United States, they're 501c3, so guess what they don't pay? Ding, 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 taxes. That's right. So there's assets that you might have in your estate that your kids are going to pay tax on. And then there's assets you have that your kids won't pay tax on. Things like life insurance, right? But then there's things taxed, like your IRAs, your 401ks, right? That could be a gift to the church. A percentage to the church could save your kids paying taxes on that.
Okay? So you want to give non-taxable assets to your kids, but
exactly.
The taxable assets go to the church because the church won't have to pay taxes.
You got it. Yeah. There's ways to do that. So that's what I walk you through there. But really understanding all of this is the foundation to your whole estate plan. So I sit down and we walk through and I'll help you understand what your assets are. Because a lot of times I've seen people with multi-million dollar estates. And they look at me and they go, well, we don't understand this. I'm like, well, you've done a great job. But they don't understand how it's going to be distributed out to the kids. So I work with financial planners. I work with tax advisors. I was just on the phone earlier today with a financial planner, just talking through some things that we're working with a couple that's getting some things in order. So I'm part of that planning team. And I'm helping communicate things. So I'm that person that, you know, you can ask me, and you might say, well, I don't want to ask an attorney, but could you find this out? And yeah, I'll find it out if I don't know the answer, because the foundation, we've got three attorneys at the foundation, and they'll prepare any charitable documents for you, free of charge. So keep that in mind as well. If you need to go to an attorney to amend your trust or update a will or get a ladybird deed or those kind of things, yeah, you will pay for that. But anything that the foundation does for you as far as documents for your charitable giving, that's all free of charge. Okay? And any of the services that I help you with, you're not going to get a bill. Okay? Just so you understand.
No strings attached.
No strings attached.
There's hardly anything nowadays that's truly free except your services.
Thank you, CEF, and thank you, Michigan District.
Yeah,
that's
it.
That's
right.
Yep, that's right. Well, let's talk a little bit about stewardship efforts. The church wants us to be 100% good stewards of all that God's given us. But you know what? The truth is, only 50% of people have a will or a trust. And that's not just LCMS statistics. That is overall, all right? Why is that? Well, people think it's too complicated. It can be complicated, but I'm here to help simplify that and make it a lot less stressful for you. Some people are just, we're talking about this, fear of dying. People think, if I make a plan, I'm going to die. Well, I got news for you. Everybody in here, you guys know your birthday, right? Yeah. Anybody in here know your death date? Do you want to know it? I don't know. No. Right? So a lot of times people think, I don't want to plan because then I'll die. That's a horrible thing to think about. Okay. I don't have anything or I don't have enough. Well, you know what? Even though you may not think you have much, it's not just about planning the assets that you have. It's also planning out what your statement of faith to your family, right? Talking to your family about your faith, sharing that with your family. That's all part of this whole art of dying, right? Stewarding all of that. We're stewarding not just the blessings of gifts of money, of financial things that we steward, but we also steward our faith walk. We also steward our jobs, our careers. Even in retirement, you're still stewarding. Even grandkids. You're going to steward. You're going to set that example for them, right? You're going to be an example for the rest of your family to follow by planning well, okay? People think, you know, you're young and you're healthy. Well, I got a phone call from my son. He lives out in Southern California, and he called me Sunday morning, and he said, Mom, I need you to pray for a friend of mine. Her 20-year-old daughter was in a horrible car accident. Two people were killed. She's got spinal cord issues. They don't know if she's going to make it. And he's like, would you just please pray for her? I'm like, absolutely I will. I mean, they're just devastated. That young bunch of young kids doing stupid stuff in a car, you know how that happens, right? So we don't know when that day's going to come. So I always tell parents, if you've got grandkids that are 18 and older, they need powers of attorney for medical, especially for medical, but medical and financial. Even 18-year-olds, I know they don't think they're adults, but the government says they are. And so you need to have they even need to have a plan, right? A lot of times people don't want to make a plan. We're so busy. We got kids, we got work, and when we're retired, we're having fun. Well, still, let's make a plan. Take a little bit of time out of that fun retirement, and let's make a plan. And then this last one here, attorneys are expensive. Well, you know what's really expensive? Not having a plan. And letting the state of Michigan make all the decisions for your estate. Because guess who's going to come out ahead on that one? The state of Michigan, you bet, yeah. So let's make a plan. Here's some more statistics for you. 70% of those people, like if you were sitting there patting yourself on the back and you're saying, oh good, I'm on that 50% side that has a plan, look at that. 70% of those, they need to have them updated. You probably, if you've made a plan, you may have done that 15 or 20 years ago. Things have changed. Time to pull those documents out. Time to review everything, right? And then here's the last one, and this is a lot of where we come in. Only 7 to 12% of people that have a plan have any kind of a gift to ministry. I have a lot of people that will say, Julie, we have our plan, we look at it, yep, it's great, it's all in shape, so what do you need me for? And they go, we don't have any gift to the church. How do we do that? Sure, I can show you ways to do that that aren't going to mess up the plan you already have, but it'll be a blessing by using the assets that you have and just directing a few by making a beneficiary. The church can be a beneficiary of some of your assets, a percentage, right? And that can be a blessing, okay? So people think that if you leave a gift to ministry, it's going to take away from the kids. Not necessarily. And we talk about all of that when we meet, right? No one ever asked me, well, that's why I'm here. Sometimes pastors sometimes don't like to talk about, oh, I don't want to talk to our members about money. Well, great, bring me in. I'll do it. I'll ask about money. And then a lot of times when you don't know how to leave a gift, I don't know how to do this, and I'll show you how. There's some real simple ways to leave gifts to ministry that aren't going to take away from the kids. All right? So when do you need to update your estate plan? Here's just some life changes, some checkpoints. You can see anytime you move, you sell a house, you need to update, especially if you have a trust, because you need to put the new house in the trust. Maybe you get a new interest in a ministry or a charity that you're working in. Maybe there's been a wedding. Maybe there's been a divorce. Maybe there's been births or deaths, job changes, retirement, sicknesses, all kinds of little trigger points where we say, you need to review things. You always need to be pulling out those documents. Just stick it in your brain. Every 3, at the most 5 years, pull those documents back out, right? And you should have them in a place where the family knows where mom and dad keep their documents. They should be in a binder. When you work with me and we go through the lifetime plan for giving, at the end we get a binder and I'm a teacher by trade, right? So I come with tabs and we get it all organized and we get it all in order. And then we put it, okay, it's on this shelf or it's in this file drawer, but kids have got to know. Important people have got to know where those documents are so that they can find them when that time comes, right? So this is a 4-step process. It's called the Lifetime Plan for Giving. You've got this information in your folders. And the first step is going to be the discovery step. So if you want to meet with me after tonight, I make trips all over Michigan. And so I'll sit down with you and we're going to talk about the kids. We're going to talk about your stewardship goals. You're going to fill out a survey guide that I'll give you at the end tonight. And you'll fill out a survey guide that'll tell me all this information. And we're going to talk about all of that, right? That's the first step. That's our first meeting, the discovery meeting. And then about a month later, I'm going to come back, maybe 3 weeks to a month later, I'm going to come back and we're going to do plan designs. I'm going to share with you, here's some designs. Here's some ways you can leave all blessings to your kids, but then also how to leave a gift to ministry. Might be 2 or 3 different ways to do that, depending on your goals, right? And then we're going to go through maybe 3 weeks to a month later, we're going to do a summary where it's going to be, Julie, this is a plan we like. I'm going to make sure you understand it. Both of you are married. Both of you need to understand it. And if there's any documents that need to be put together for the charitable gift, our attorneys will do that. We'll get those all ready. You're going to review those. And then the implementation is where you're going to sign things. Now, it may be that we need to go to an attorney. If things need to be done in an attorney's office, we'll do it there. Sometimes you just go to the bank. I mean, on Friday, I'm going to a bank. We're signing some documents that just need to be notarized, right? Those kind of things. But I also communicate with your attorney. So, for instance, this couple on Friday, their attorney has seen all these charitable documents. He's given the okay on it. And then the foundation put those documents together, and now we're just going to go to the bank and get them notarized. It's just that simple, right? So that's the lifetime plan for giving. Now, sometimes it may just be that we just meet once or twice. You may have a plan all in place. You just want a simple way to leave a gift. We make sure it's in place, then it's done. So this can take anywhere from one visit. It could take 6 months that we're still working on things. You're getting to an attorney, reviewing, getting things amended. It takes time. So be patient on that, but we'll get it done, and I'm going to stick with you and make sure that it gets all the way done. And then even at the end here, the implementation stage, we're going to make sure all your beneficiaries are in order. I'm going to make sure you know how to access the beneficiaries, who do you need to contact to change your beneficiaries. Can you go online? Do you need to talk to your financial planner? It depends on how things are invested and what kind of company you're working with, right? But I'm going to follow up and make sure that's all taken care of also, so that things actually are going to happen the way you want them to. All right? Any questions so far?
No. Julie,
yes?
I have one.
Sure.
Giving church stock.
Yes.
Okay. Can LCMS help in that respect?
Yes, we can.
Other than finding a broker, which I don't know if Christ has.
No, the foundation can do that. They can liquidate it, and then they can send the check to Christ Lutheran.
Okay.
We do that all the time.
Oh, great.
And if you do have stocks, we always encourage you, if you're going to do that and you want that for like 2024, start getting that. Contact me, and I'll get you in touch with. We have one person at the foundation that'll work with you on that. But start like no later than I would say the end of October. Just because it takes time, and everybody's trying to get those end-of-the-year stock gifts. Yeah, and they have to be done by the 31st. Mm-hmm. And you know, the holiday, so the foundation, I says, think Halloween. That's when you want to start getting that liquidated if you want to get a stock gift. And what he means by that is a stock gift, which if you give part of, you know, a gift of stock, it can wipe out the capital gains. And it could be a gift to the church, which they don't pay tax on, and it saves you in the taxes on that gain that you earn on that gift. So it can be a beautiful way to make a gift to the church.
I know our church and others do get stock gifts periodically.
Yeah.
I don't know how Fred and Tom handle it. I think they use CEF to manage it and liquidate it. So, yeah.
Okay, yeah, CEF or the foundation will do it, or yeah, right. Whatever. But yeah. Yeah. So, all right.
What did you teach?
What did I teach?
Yeah, what grades are?
I taught I taught third grade, I've taught fourth grade, I taught preschool, worked so hard all my life teaching preschool.
Well, you're explaining everything very well, like I'm a fifth grader, so that's perfect.
I know, people say to me, boy, you can tell you're a teacher. Well, that's just part of what I do.
I like the idea that you said, because see, I'm the organized, an organized kind of person too, so that you would help us walk through this, and then you end up with helping us put a binder together.
I bring
so
it's a binder
all there.
To your house with
yes,
tabs.
Perfect. And I could put it in my little safe in the
that's
basement.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I even went so far as I made a binder. Our daughter is she's our administrator for our trust and everything. And so I made her a binder and gave her a binder of everything in it as well. And I put in there all of the investments, the passwords, the number, the investment account numbers, all of that. Because that way, she's got all of that. And if it ever changes, I just give her an update of a sheet, an Excel sheet. So, yeah, it's a good way to just keep communicating that kind of stuff to your important people. All right? So these are the things that I'm going to work with you on, walking you through that planning process. Durable power of attorney for financial and medical or health. That's while you're living. I mean, be very clear on that. Some people think that that starts when you die. No, that happens when you're living and you can't make decisions for yourself. So if you're married, you can have each other, but then also have a successor. Because what happens if you're in an accident together and you're both in a coma? Who's going to talk to the doctor? So get somebody else on there as your successor, powers of health care for medical and financial. Okay? And this is where I talk about college kids. College kids are college age, you know, those 18, 20, 24-year-olds, they make stupid decisions sometimes. They need to have powers of attorney also. And so if you've got grandkids, you know, our kids that age, talk to them about that. If you've got younger kids under the age of 18, naming of guardians and then a minor's trust. Kids under 18 cannot receive large sums of money. So that's got to go into some kind of a trust, or it's got to go to the guardian, however you want. That's things we talk about. So I even work with young families. Now, with young families, if they've got younger children, it's more about taking care of the kids. We're not going to worry about a gift to the church if tragedy happens to a young family. But what we're going to make sure of is that the kids are taken care of, that there's guardians named, that there's enough life insurance to help provide for the surviving spouse or the kids if mom and dad are both tragically killed. I know it's ugly and it's yucky, but we got to talk about it. And we got to get that out and let these young families know that you got, even as a young family, you got a plan. You got a plan because something might happen. And if you're called home to heaven, it's too late. You're not there to answer questions and sign documents. Okay? And then you've heard me talk a lot about this reviewing all ownership issues and beneficiary designations. One of the big reasons why, you can have whatever you want to say in your will or in your trust, but if your beneficiaries don't agree with that, which one supersedes? The beneficiaries supersede anything in the will. So if your will says you want to give your nephew, you know, 50% of your estate, but all of your assets are payable on death to your next door neighbor or whoever, that's who's getting all your assets, not your nephew in the will, right? So that's why we really want to check on those payable on death. Here's an example. A couple got, they were both second marriages, so the husband and wife had some life insurance. I actually heard this on Dave Ramsey. I listen to financial pieces. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dave Ramsey fan here. Yeah. Taught that stuff for like 8 years. And this woman said she and her husband had life insurance. They changed the beneficiaries for each other because they had gotten remarried, right? So they did all that. Her husband was tragically killed in an accident. When they went to look at the life insurance, his life insurance, the company didn't update it. There was something happened. They didn't check. You should always check to make sure this actually happened. They actually have it in place. And they didn't, and the ex-wife got the life insurance. There was nothing she could do about it. Yeah. Yeah, that's not the time you want to find that out. Right. No. Yeah. Yeah, so that was kind of sad. So we want to make sure all those beneficiaries are properly listed, and that's where we can also check to make sure there's a gift to the church. If you want to make a gift to the church, we'll show you how to do it. And you get to pick the percentage, right? It's an easy way to do that. And then this family blessing. You've got some templates on the left side in your folder here. There's two sheets of paper in the front there. These are some templates. These are not legal documents. You can take these, copy them. You can write your own. But one of the things that the first time we meet, this is something you can go home tonight and start writing out your family blessing. What do you want to say to your loved ones? And then I'm going to encourage you to share this with them while you're living. Don't let them hear about how important your faith was when you're in a casket up in the front of church and Pastor Measles doing your funeral. Let them hear it from you while you're living. And it's a great opportunity to share with your kids and open up a conversation about faith and about your beliefs and why you go to church and why this is important. Boy, it just opens up all kinds of conversations with your kids and with your grandkids. And if we're not teaching this to our grandkids, they may never hear it. We have a great opportunity. So use this as an opportunity to share your faith. And I gave you the permission to do it, so here you go. Just to let you know a little bit about what we do at the foundation, last year in 2023, we distributed 3,190 gifts for today. These are gifts that we're investing for charitable giving. That equaled $38.3 million. And that went out to different things like churches and schools, LCMS, well, some of this got kind of mixed up in it, other LCMS entities, seminaries, districts, universities, colleges, and other charities. It doesn't all have to be LCMS. If you've got a local charity or, Samaritan's Purse comes to mind, I've done gifts for that, or the Salvation Army, things like that. Yeah, we'll help you get a gift together for that. It's what you want to do. Now, if you want to leave a gift to Planned Parenthood, I'm not helping you. Sorry. We don't leave gifts to any kind of abortion type of, because that's not who we are as LCMS, and that's definitely not who we are as children of God. So we protect life, okay? But we did distribute $38.3 million in charitable gifts, okay? And then also, last year alone, we set up the gift planners, myself and my 21 other buddies, set up 803 gifts for tomorrow. That equaled $139.5 million. Now that money is still sitting in your investment accounts. That money's not leaving. You still use that money. We put a plan in place. We're getting the buckets in place for your trust, for your will, for the beneficiaries, for the ministries and the charities that you care about. But none of that money is going out of your accounts until you're called home to heaven. And then the buckets start to get filled. Okay? Now, if you want to leave a charitable gift today, yeah, I can show you how to do that, but we're going to work with, I'm going to make sure that, you know, the financial planner's aware of it, you know, those kind of things. We're going to work together. But my goal is to mainly make sure you have gifts in place for when you're called home to heaven. But in the meantime, you use that money, right? You live off of it. You spend it. You take your required minimum distributions, all that wonderful stuff, right? Yeah. Okay. All right. And then these were the gifts, you know, that really got messed up in there. Endowment funds, gift plans, split interest, donor advice funds. We do all that kind of stuff at the foundation, at the LCMS Foundation. Okay. So the lifetime plan for giving, these are the giving plans that we follow. This is a list of these with more details about them are on the right side here. These giving plans where it goes through a bequest gift, that's a super easy gift. You can put that in place at any time and you can change it at any time. A donor advice fund, personal endowment, charitable gift annuity, charitable remainder trust. I'll go through, if you have any questions, we'll talk about that when we meet, and if there's something that fits with what your goals are, I'll show you how you can put that into your plans, okay? And if there's documents that need to be done for any of these, that's where our foundation attorneys will put those documents together, okay? So here's a, real quick, and I'm thinking I got, yeah, a few minutes yet. Pull out on the left side, there's some designs. Now this is Martin and Catherine Luther, okay? The first plan that you're looking at there is their current plan. This was, if Martin and Catherine Luther had just started, let's say I'm the gift planning counselor and I get to meet with the Luthers, right? And so I get there, we do a survey, I find out about their family, and I get a list of all their assets, liabilities, and you can see here that they have an estate with their personal property, other investments, life insurance, retirement, and annuities. Their estate comes to $2,672,400. Now you may look at that and say, we don't have near that, or you may go, we have a lot more than that. It doesn't matter. We're going to get a plan in place. So this is just an example. And I don't think Martin and Catherine Luther had this kind of idea. Okay, in this plan, Martin and Catherine Luther wanted the family to get everything. Now this went maybe through the trust or through a will, however it was being distributed, but the family got $2,162,400. Who else got a gift? Look at the red number in the middle in that box. Who else got a gift?
Uncle Sam.
Uncle Sam got a $510,000 gift, and most of that, the majority, and I will say about 99% of that, came from these retirement and annuities. These are taxable. You know, when you take out your required minimum distribution, some of you, if you're over 73, you're doing this now. And when you withdraw that, that's income, and you pay tax on it. Well, when you die, and you leave that to your kids, they pay tax on it based on their income levels. Now, the government also changed how you distribute that. In 2019, the Secure Act changed how you distribute your IRA assets to your heirs. It used to be 20 years, and they could withdraw out of it over 20 years, right? Very low impact on their income. But in 2019, the government said, no, 10 years. And you have to take, your heirs have to take an R&D every year, and by year 10, it's all got to be withdrawn out, and they get hit with a tax on that, okay? So just so you're aware of that, and that's why we say that money should not, and even attorneys agree, that money does not go through, your IRA assets do not go through your trust anymore. You keep those separate from the trust, because that can blow up, that can make your trust all taxable, okay? And it can cause a real headache for your trustee. So that's where the big tax came from Martin and Catherine. But Martin and Catherine worked with me, their gift planning counselor, so flip this page over. And Martin and Catherine said, well, we want to leave a gift to the family. Do you have this on? You should see another plan on the back. Okay. But Martin and Catherine said, well, we don't want to take away anything from the kids, but we still want to leave something for the church. Now, I can do a couple of different things in this type of situation. You'll notice here all of the assets in the first three boxes are going to go to the kids at second death. That means when Martin and Catherine Luther are both gone, the kids are going to get $972,400. And then this last box, retirement and annuities, that's going to go into Martin and Catherine Luther's charitable remainder trust. And that money, that $1.7 million, is going to pay out to the kids for 20 years, so they're still getting the money. But again, it's spread out to 20 years. It's legal because it's a charitable remainder trust. And the kids are going to receive a 5% distribution. You can go up to 6.5% on that. And they're going to, in this case, they would get $85,000 a year of income. So if you've got, let's say there were three kids, and you want each of them to have a third, they get a third of $85,000. Okay, and they get that income for 20 years. Here's the real, the beauty of this plan is after 20 years, the kids received their $1.7 million, and Martin and Catherine Luther said, well, the remainder, because that was invested at the foundation, and that stayed invested, that $1.7 million now gets distributed, another $1.7 million gets distributed to the ministries. Like you could say, I've had people say, well, put 50% to the church, put 20% to this, and 10% here. And you do a gift letter, and that can be changed. In fact, just today I met with a couple, and they're changing their gift letter for their charitable remainder trust, and I'm sending it in, and we're changing it. Doesn't involve an attorney. Our attorneys do the gift letter, right? So in this case, 1.7 is going to go directly to the church at the end of that trust. But here's one of the things I do a lot with these. Martin and Catherine may have said, but Julie, we don't want the church to wait 20 years to get that $1.7 million. Can we make a bequest gift out of this when we die? So they get an immediate gift. The church gets an immediate gift. And then the kids get the distribution. And then the church gets another gift. Absolutely. So we might take 10% of this. So this, in this case, $170,000 would go to Christ Stevens. So what would you do with $170,000? You'd be like, hallelujah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in this case, $170,000 would go immediately at Martin and Catherine Luther's death. Would go to Christ Stevensville, and then the kids would get their distribution paid out. So it might be a little bit less. It's going to be paid out to the kids, but then the church will get the remainder of that. So it's going to be somewhere around that 1.5, let's just say. Somewhere around there, 1.6 or something. Okay? So this is a nice way to do it. There's other ways. There's other types of gifts, but I just wanted to show you those two. There's another one in your folder. It's got a few more moving parts, a donor advised fund, a personal endowment. There's all kinds of different ways to set up gifts, and you can look at that one. It just gets a little more into the weeds. A few more documents, but I've done those. And here's the beauty of this. Two times now in the 4 years that I've been working with the foundation, twice now I've got to go into congregations and give them big checks from Charitable Remainder Trust that somebody, the one of them was the mother, sold the family farm, and when she died, the five kids received distribution for 20 years, and then I got to call the church, and it was, I didn't do the plan, somebody did it, and I got to call the church, and I said, I have a check for you, and it was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the church, I talked to the pastor, and he said, oh my gosh, we're in the middle of replacing the roof in the parking lot. This is just like a gift from God. And I got to go to the church service, and all five of the kids were there, and they even had grandkids there, and they talked about their mom and the faith that she, it was just a really neat experience. That was a really cool thing. So I've gotten to do that twice with these charitable remainder trusts. So it does work, right? And it just takes a little bit of planning. But again, this is revocable or revocable until both of you are called home to heaven. So these are plans that can be in place, and you can change them and rearrange them as long as one of you is living on this earth. Okay? Any questions about any of this so far? Yes?
I noticed on this sheet of the different giving plans, there's a charitable remainder trust on here.
Yep.
It says payouts during life.
You can also, yes.
So you can structure this so that charitable remainder trust gives something to your heirs, your children, even while you're still alive.
You can even have it pay. Now, you can't, if you're still living, you cannot fund it with your IRA assets, okay? Where that works out is if you've got a business, if you've got farmland, if you've got a 1031, you know, like a rental property, and you want to sell that and you don't want to pay the tax on that, you can put that in a charitable remainder trust. It can pay out to you and your spouse over your lifetimes, and then it can pay out to your kids, and then it can pay out to the ministry. I know somebody that did that. Yeah. So it can work that way, but you cannot use the IRA assets to fund it. That can't be done while you're living. That this plan, funding it with the IRA assets, that's a testamentary. If that happens when you die, then the remainder of it can go into that. And you can fund that with other. It doesn't have to be IRA. It can be life insurance. But the reason we start with IRAs is because these are taxable, right? So we're gonna lower the tax burden on your kids. All of these assets over here can go to your kids non-tax. So let's give your kids the non-taxed items. If you're gonna make a gift, let's make it out of those taxable. Because again, Christ Stevensville does not pay tax. So that's why we want to give taxable assets to the church. Start there, And we can add to it if need be, but let's start with the taxable. Does that make sense? Yes?
Is life insurance taxable?
No. Life insurance is not taxable. So your kids get that tax-free. So if you've got a $500,000 life insurance policy and you die, whoever the heirs are on that policy, the beneficiaries, will get that $500,000 free and clear of any taxes. Okay? All right. Okay. Okay. So we talked about this already. The stretch inherited IRA is gone. That ended in 2019. Okay? Qualified charitable distributions, if you are over 70 and a half, you can start taking advantage of this. If you have IRAs, it's got to be an IRA. And if it's still in a 401k or a 403b or anything like that, you have to convert it over to an IRA, which you should do anyway. And then you're going to be taking RMDs, required minimum distributions. That starts at 73. So for most people, they start using this. They start taking advantage of this IRA rollover at 73. But you can actually start it at 70 and a half. If you've got a lot of IRA money and you've got a pension and you don't need all that IRA money and you want to start spending that down, use that as your charitable giving vehicle. So this is what I mean. If you have, let's say you've got a required minimum distribution and the government tells you how much you have to withdraw from your IRA, and let's just say it's $25,000 a year, that's income. You're going to pay tax on that, right? So you're like, yeah, we know, we do this, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
But your qualified charitable distribution is where you contact Fidelity, Edward Jones, whoever your investment company is, and you say, I want to send $5,000 to the church and give me the $20,000 as income. So your custodial company sends $5,000 directly to Christ Stevensville. It does not go through your bank account. And you get the $20,000 in your checking account or wherever you have it put. You pay the tax on the $20,000, but you don't pay any tax on the $5,000, right? So what that does is it fulfills your required minimum distribution. You've withdrawn the $25,000, but $5,000 of it you made as a charitable gift. Now you don't get a charitable contribution for this, but you don't pay the tax on it. And this is outside of even if you take the standard deduction. So this form, this tells you about it. And our attorneys put this together. And this has got the 2024. Yeah, I made sure I updated it. So if you want one of these, they're up here. These are not in your folder. But if you want one, you can feel free or take a few. I always tell churches, if you do anything, talk to your members about taking advantage of this because I had a guy just the other day, he goes, heck, man, I give more to my church now because it saved me on taxes. And I don't need the money. I know people that they're like, I don't even need my IRA money. So great. Let's make that your charitable vehicle. And that can be for the rest of your life. If you give that money to ministries and charities and it doesn't go through your checking account or your bank account, you'll never pay tax on it. Wow. What a blessing. So yeah, you can do that. So take advantage of it, right? Alright, so things I'm going to do, I'm going to encourage you to write that statement of faith. You've got those templates in your folder. You can start on that this week. Create a gift plan to provide for your family and also for ministries. Okay? There's a form in here that I would really appreciate if you fill this out and give me some feedback. If you'd like to meet with me, there's some boxes, there are little lines down here. You can check that. I'm just going to follow up with you and give you a phone call, an email. Hey, I'm coming over to the Stevensville area, and I'll give you some dates and some options. And if those don't work, let me know what does work. I'll make trips over. I go all over Michigan, okay? And I'm happy to come over and just, we can meet in your home, or we can meet in a quiet, confidential room here in the church if you'd like. Rather me meet up here. And we'll just go through what you have in place and what you need to maybe tweak or tie up some loose ends. Or if you just want me to just look it over and make sure it's all in place. Yeah, I'll do that too. Okay. Any questions? Yeah.
Yeah, I do have a question.
Sure.
You were talking about the will and the trust. If you, rather than a percent, but have a dollar amount that you're giving to the church off the top, and another amount to the school, as long as it's written in the will, in writing, one should be okay. Or is that something that's going to be taxed?
Because the issue is going to be if it's going through the will, are all your assets also going to go through the will? Or how are those paid out?
It depends on what it is.
So if you've got, if
we have both a will and we have a trust.
So the
and
gift
we updated them in January.
So the gift is through the trust.
Pardon?
The gift is written in the trust. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying it's written in the will.
I would,
in the spouse's will, he has designated I want blank and I want blank.
Well, I would need to look at see how things are beneficiary, because if it's going into the trust, then it's going to follow the language of the trust, not the will. So I'd have to look at that and see.
Okay.
If there might be a cleaner way to do that. And
that's
here's the other thing. Right. And here's the other issue I have about, and this is what, and attorneys will say this, when you put in dollar amounts,
mm-hmm.
So what happens if you use more of your assets than you thought, and let's say it's $25,000, and let's say there's, you know, God blesses you with a long life, and you live a long time, and you use all those assets, and there's not $25,000. Guess what? There's probably not going to be a gift.
Okay.
So that's why we use percentages. It's just cleaner, and that makes sure that the kids, everybody.
You're saying a percentage is a better way to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you spend the money, it's not a cleaner way to go.
Well, yeah, because then that makes sure that, you know, if you still want family to get something, if you still want the church to get something, because the church won't get anything. If there's less than $25,000, the family's going to get it and the church isn't going to get a dime. So this way, at least everybody gets something. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we did it with an attorney. We assumed we were doing the right thing.
I know, and attorneys will do what you tell them to do. And they'll write it in. But I've stood right in front of attorneys and said, would this gift happen? I mean, I had one, they had $15,000 going to a nephew, but everything was beneficiaried outside the will. And he's like, no, that gift isn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, now we know.
Okay.
We can meet and talk about that. I'd like to take a look at it and see.
Yeah, I would like to be for that reason.
Did you have a question?
I know every situation is different, but a lady I know who lived in 80 willed her farmhouse, the farmhouse that had been having her entire life,
mm-hmm.
and beyond to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest went to the heirs.
Yeah.
And that worked.
Yeah.
In another case, my aunt also lived to be 90, made my sister the executor of the will. Living at the nursing home, at the assisted living, she kept saying, oh, give $1,000 to so and so. Oh, add this person to verbal.
Mm-hmm.
So when the time came, and my sister Jeff talked to Roger Getzky's man, he said, give to the heirs, the six or seven nieces, we'll sign the okay, then we can do that. We can fulfill the wishes.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone said okay, and that was it. So,
okay.
And I guess my question would be, in my case, I'd like to have a gift to Concordia Ann Arbor,
mm-hmm.
especially now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And but I can't do that now.
Mm-hmm. But you'd like to do it when
yeah.
have something in place for when God calls you home.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
we can.
And I have a will and. And it's split between my two sisters. But I also have two Thrivent things
mm-hmm.
that I did last week. One is a $1,000 policy, life insurance
mm-hmm.
policy, during the polio epidemic that my parents took out. Would it be possible for me to assign them as beneficiaries to that
mm-hmm.
life insurance policy?
Yep. Get the tax ID number. You need the tax, the EIN. Like for the church, all 501c3s have an EIN. That's a tax ID number. You want to use that because if you just put Christ Lutheran Church on your beneficiary, I guarantee you, and this has happened, Fidelity, whoever your company is, I don't care how good they are, even Thrivent, they'll sit there and go, we don't know which Christ Lutheran Church that is. We don't know. And they will hold that money. So get that tax ID number. And I can help you do that. We can get that all set up. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Sounds like it's easier to get into heaven than to success.
You know, it's just a warning to everybody, not a warning, but just a reminder to just get everything planned out. It's really what it's about.
Yeah, it is a little complicated, and there's a lot of, you know, it can be a lot of moving parts, but one of the things that our attorneys at the Crown Nation, and they've been doing this for a long time, and they just go, keep it simple. You don't need to be all complicated. It doesn't need to have a ton of moving parts. Just keep it simple. So that's even like your, that's why we use percentages instead of dollar amounts, right? That keeps it much cleaner, and it makes sure that there's actually going to be a gift that's going to happen so that something doesn't fall through the cracks. Because you're in heaven. You know, you're praising the Lord. You're not looking down here and going, oh, wait, don't. Yeah, and you're not signing anything anymore, and you're not here to ask questions to. So you want to make sure you're very clear on what your wishes are while you're living and get things in place so that, you know, you hear about sad stories of things that happen, and boy, that's tough. Yeah. All right.
Well, that's wonderful. Okay. Thank you for all the information. Okay. Yeah, that was excellent. I do have to say that you've made me aware of how complicated things can be in modern life with all of these different issues.
Yeah.
And to me, it would be a great comfort, and I'll have to do this for after I get Jill on board. Have you come out, and because I want to compliment you. You have a great teacher's approach to educating us on all these things. So
it was like that first grade class I used to teach.
So I do think that, like in my case, you can help explain this in a lot better way than I could to my wife, and then you walk us through getting a plan, and we still may need to go to attorney to get stuff done, but you can help explain everything and teach us about that.
Yeah.
So that's, use her services if you need them.
I've had a lot of attorneys go, how did you learn all this stuff? And I'm like, you know, I'm just a sponge. I love learning things. And even a number of years ago, I went through and got all my securities licenses because I was just like, I'm going to have a plan B. I don't know what God's going to do. And so I learned all that. And, you know, I don't have those anymore because I work with the foundation now. But I understand it all. And I understand about investments and how this passes through and the taxation on these things. And now I look back, and my husband said too, he's like, God just was getting you ready for what you're doing now. And I'm like, obviously he was, because here I am.
I asked her one thing about where she can really help. When it's time to go to the attorney, that billable hours that attorneys have, it's now been shortened.
It's been reduced because she has plans for you.
Right. You do not want to be asking attorneys questions. And the other thing, I wanted to mention.
Because you ask them questions and they're charging time for all that.
Oh, yes, questions. They are. They're more than happy. The survey guides, and I forgot to pull these out. When you want to meet with me, give me your response sheet and I will give you one of these booklets. And the first part of it, and I can send you a digital copy, you can do this online, but this is where you fill out all the information about the family, the stewardship goals, that's all in here. Don't get overwhelmed, it's not that big of a deal. But also in the back, our attorneys put all kinds of great information about estate planning and stepped up basis. If you don't even look at anything else in the back, go to pages 19 and 20, passing on your home at death, passing on assets at death, and the taxation on that and how that works. And so read through that. It's really important information to know. Because you can save your kids a lot of pain and suffering with the IRS if you do it right. Okay? So pick one of these up, give me a response sheet, and I'll give you a booklet, and we'll set up a time to meet. And, hey, it's summer's coming, so, man, I get to come over and go to the beach.
Yeah, bring your family. Go to the beach.
Bring your family along. All right, well, thank you all so much.
You'll stick around for a few minutes afterwards if anyone has questions. All right, let's rise and close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thanks for coming. Have a good evening.
Thank you.